I'm Jen Taylor Skinner, and this is The Electorat. On this episode, I have a conversation with Andrea Haley, the CEO of Vote.org. Vote.org is the largest nonprofit, nonpartisan voting registration and get out the vote tech platform in the country. They've registered more than 3.3 million new voters, verified the registration status of over 8 million voters, and they've provided essential voting information like polling location information and registration deadlines to tens of millions of website users. And given that this is the most important election of our lifetimes, the services and information that Vote.org provides are truly critical. Andrea and I discuss how they're shifting their operations during the pandemic and the crucial role that vote by mail will have in making sure that everyone has access to the ballot this November without risking their health. So here is my conversation with Andrea Haley. Andrea Haley, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here, Jennifer.
I just want to talk a bit about Vote.org and what you've accomplished over the past several years, because it's really impressive. You know, when I look at the numbers, you've registered more than 3.3 million new voters and you've verified registration for over 8 million voters. And you do that primarily through technology, right? How does that work?
Yes, absolutely. Anyone can come to our site, vote.org, and they can verify registration status. And if you're registered, it'll let you know. And if you're not registered, the site will lead you through a workflow that's specific to your state and allow you to go ahead and in states where you have online voter registration, go ahead and register to vote. And right now you can request absentee or vote by mail through the site. So that's pretty exciting. And we've had a ton of organic traffic, and we also have a lot of partners who use our tools and embed them on their websites. Through that, we end up with a lot of traffic and registrations working hand in hand with our partnership groups.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that change, about being able to register for absentee ballots and vote by mail. I think that's really, really important, especially given the times we're in. But I know you and I were talking about this offline, that one of the most important things that people can do right now is to go to vote.org and check to see if you are registered. That's something that you say that people should do early, right?
Yes, we like to say do it early and often. So you can verify your registration, make sure you're still, you know, on the rolls. And if you're not, then you can go ahead and register through the site. But the verification of your registration takes, you know, less than 2 minutes. So that's the easiest way to just go online. You can check on your phone or on your computer. And we're really encouraging people to go ahead and do that and to continuously check that it's up to date. And then I think the other thing we're really encouraging people to do is if you're going to vote absentee, and if you can in your state, which will take you through all your state rules on the site, then to do that as early as possible so that you're getting your request in early, just in case states, you know, get overwhelmed with requests, especially in places where they're not used to having to administer vote by mail. So go on the site, ask for your absentee and verify your status.
Right. That's really important, especially this year. I mean, we saw during the primaries, numbers are up in lots of states, right? And people who think that they're on top of everything and think they might be registered, they should just check anyway. Because like you said, states could get overwhelmed. And if you actually need to register, you don't want to be caught in November and find out that you're not registered and you've missed your deadline. Because I don't even know when my voter registration deadline is for my state. I don't know.
Yep, that's right. I mean, and unfortunately, we have so many different deadlines in this country, depending on what state you're in, because we have this kind of, I think we've discussed before, wonky thing where, unlike other countries, where all 50 states in the U.S. administer their own elections. And so because of that, you may have different registration deadlines than, you know, somebody who's living in a different state than you. So I don't think that people kind of are aware of those deadlines off the top of their head. So it's better to go online early, go to vote.org. We tell you the deadlines on vote.org too. So you can find those out there and get access to that information. But really the earlier you get into the systems and in the process, the better.
And do it often. So yeah, so that you bring up a really good point about in this country, because in other countries, I know the things are different. And that brings up a really fundamental question for me. Why is this a thing in this country? Why do we even have this separate, it's a seemingly convoluted registration process? And, you know, you have organizations and activists and all of this money being dedicated just to get people to do something that we say that we want all Americans to do. And all Americans have the right to do. They have the right to exercise their right to vote. But yet you have to go through these hoops to get registered. And I'm thinking about countries like Australia and Canada. And I think Australia has upwards of 95% voter participation, right, in their elections. So why in America is it so complicated? And why is it a separate process?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that we need to go back and redesign our systems with voters in mind and design them. This is a great time to imagine, as everybody's having to change and adjust in the time of COVID. Why don't we imagine a system where everybody is participating and where we can get to 80% voter participation in the country, and then work backwards from there? What would it take to get to 80% voter participation? Because we think at Vote.org that voters want to participate. We believe that many of the systems in place are created in ways that are not conducive. For instance, many states do not have 20 days of early voting. That would be immensely helpful for people who need time off from work or who are concerned right now about social distancing and don't want to stand in lines. I think that there's a lot of conversation that could be had about how we design a system with the actual voting population in mind, because that's what needs to be serviced. I also think we're in a moment where a lot of voting systems need to modernize. You know, any state that doesn't have online voter registration right now, there's no reason to not go ahead and make the change to online voter registration. I mean, we saw New Jersey change, we saw North Carolina change, and I think that the handful of remaining states that don't have online voter registration should go ahead and do that. The other thing is, we know it's easier for a lot of people when they can vote by mail. So people should have an option about whether they want to go into a polling location or whether they want to vote by mail. And, you know, states should automatically, in a time of COVID, just make that so that you don't need an excuse to vote by mail in any state. It should be kind of a given. And you kind of think long term here, what are the things that would make voting easier on people and participation easier on people? And these are just, you know, the things I've said are just a couple of things that would make it easier on everybody. But I don't think our system is designed for the modern world that we're in right now. And I don't think it was designed with the anticipation of full participation of our population. But to have a healthy and thriving democracy, that's how we're going to have to start thinking about this.
Right. You know, in my state, Washington State, we do have vote by mail. And I can barely remember not being able to vote by mail. Is there any data to say that it would increase voter registration or voter participation?
Yes, I think it has increased voter participation, especially in Western states like your state of Washington's. What is unclear is, you know, it just depends on the state. It changes who comes out to vote, but we're not quite sure all of how. But we do know that overall numbers tend to go up when you can easily access the ballot.
Right. But we probably don't have enough data. I don't know how many states right now actually have long-term in place vote by mail systems for every election, not just in the time of a pandemic or, you know, COVID-19. Do you know that offhand? Just how many states?
I don't. I mean, I know a handful of states have a history of vote by mail, although sometimes not a super long one, but I mean, you have a history of, and they tend to be mostly Western states. So Colorado, Washington, you know, I think Utah, have histories of vote by mail. And so it tends to be that Western states have a longer history of it than Midwestern states do.
So Vote.org, I know that you had some great numbers in 2018. You've generally had great numbers, and you're on track to serve many times the number of people this year than you did in 2018. And how do you plan to do that? So things have shifted, obviously, because of the pandemic and social distancing. How do you plan to accomplish that this year? Are you shifting your projections, or are you shifting the method, or both?
So a couple of things have changed for us. The biggest thing that's changed is that we became a rapid response hub as soon as the pandemic hit. So we've had, over the history of Vote.org, 30 million users come through the site. And because of that, what we've tried to do is make sure that people who are already in our system have the information that they need to vote and to participate. And so we quickly, in Ohio and Wisconsin and places that were changing their rules within, you know, 24 hours of the election, or what's unclear as to if they're administering the election or not, those sorts of things. We try to cut through that confusion and deliver up-to-date information to voters right away on their cell phones. And so we sent out in the primaries over 4 million messages to voters in key states. And we had not planned originally to be a rapid response hub, but the shifting election dates and all of that really required that of us in the moment. And so that's one way that we're servicing people. The other way is just we're seeing increased engagement on the site where people are just excited to have their voice heard and to find out how they can participate. There are days where, and this is a wide variable, but there are days at the low end that we're at 10x what we were in traffic in this time before 2018. And there are days that were, you know, like around Super Tuesday, that we're up 52 times the amount of traffic. So this tells me that there really is a groundswell of people who want to participate, have their voice heard, and are interested pretty early out. We had 1 million people come through the site alone on Super Tuesday. So that's exciting.
Wow.
We've had an uptick recently in use of our absentee tool, which is the only absentee tool in the civic space. And I think that that's been pretty significant because it's not like there was a major marketing campaign launched or something like that. This was organic. Our users were really demanding the opportunity to, you know, to put in their absentee requests. So that happened quite organically. And I think we've serviced somewhere upwards of 400,000 absentee requests now.
And so I was reading some stats about, you know, mail-in ballots and absentee ballots. First of all, what's the difference between the two? Because on the surface, they seem like they're the same processes, but one is just kind of in place long-term.
Well, I mean, I wish I could exactly answer that. The truth is that different states refer to these things different ways. So it can get really confusing really quick. In some places, vote by mail and absentee are the same thing. And in other states, they actually are separate things, where like vote by mail would mean you're still voting from the same place and from your house, and other, and absentee would mean something different. Like Pennsylvania is a unique case where those two terms mean something different. And so again, this is back to that, you know, issue of every state administers their own elections their own way. And some of, in this moment, what is confusing is that some states, you know, use different language than others when referring to the same thing.
That doesn't seem very efficient. But anyway, I mean, it just seems like we would have like a national, seamless, you know, kind of, you know, cohesive way of doing something like this. It also kind of leaves it open. And I know that your org is a nonpartisan organization, but it also kind of leaves it open to the partisanship of the state, I would imagine. But that's a whole other conversation.
It absolutely can. And, you know, different populations use different terminology, even outside of what the state may say. So what may be vote by mail to me might be absentee to my parents, you know? So this is, it's kind of complicated thinking through like the official languaging of each state, and then also just how people reference these things who might mean the same thing, but be coming from different generations.
Right. And then so back to the stats. So this poll I found said that 39% of Americans favor conducting all mail elections, like all mail-in elections. And that was up from, I think, around 20% from 2018. And another 40% are opposed, which I don't understand that, because again, mail-in elections are great. But, you know, even more so, more people, 48%, favor mail-in voting due to coronavirus. If you were in favor of it during the pandemic, why would you not be in favor for it, you know, all the time? But anyhow, do we know why? Why there's this difference?
I mean, I think everyone's still trying to figure some of this stuff out. I do think that everybody's in a different cognitive moment with the pandemic itself. So you'll see, you know, people say that they don't believe in vote by mail, but they believe in vote by mail if we're, you know, undergoing a pandemic in the fall. I think a lot of us are planning for the fact that COVID is not going to go away by the fall. So, you know, I think everyone is just at a different place in their minds. And some people are just inherently adverse to change. But I can tell you this, once people realize how much better it is to have a choice about whether you'd prefer to go in or whether you'd prefer to vote by mail, I think that people will be adverse to change on the other side of that. They're not going to want to go back to a singular prescribed way of voting when they're used to having options.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what are some of the barriers, do you think, to adopting vote by mail nationally? You know, who controls this? Is this the state legislature? You know, it's because it is still at the state level. Who actually controls the decision per state?
That's a great question, too. I think in some states, you're seeing governors enact emergency powers. And under those emergency powers, depending on how they're defined in that state, some of those are pretty widespread. And a governor can make some pretty sweeping reforms on their own. Other states, you see the need for the state legislature to participate. So, and some states are leaving some of these decisions to the counties. So you may have, you know, counties making decisions that are different than other counties.
So how much do you think this is due to just kind of misinformation about the process, right? Because I know that a lot of people, you know, I don't know what their motives are, or maybe I do know what their motives are, but I won't mention them, but they link vote by mail with voter fraud. And we know that there's no evidence for that. Is that part of the problem, that people think that their vote is less secure, or that the process is less secure if they vote by mail?
I think, yeah. I mean, we know that vote by mail is highly secure. There's all sorts of things that you can put in place for vote by mail, barcodes, things like that, that make it actually in a lot of ways a very secure way of running an election. But of course, there are people who would like to suppress votes and instill fear. And they're trying to do that to get people to be scared of vote by mail options. Then you have other, you know, people in African-American population who have very legitimate fears about vote by mail, given the history of having votes suppressed. So, and we do know that we have, you know, particular demographics in this country that have their vote, because of signature matching rules, have their votes tossed out at a higher rate than other people. So I think some of the fears around that are founded. And I think that's why you have to have multiple avenues for people to participate, so they can, you know that their vote counted. But as far as voter fraud goes, like, we know that you have a higher chance of being hit by lightning than you do of experiencing mail voter fraud. So, you know, I think it's a highly secure way of conducting elections.
My state is one of the states that has vote by mail, like I mentioned earlier, but we also have a way of tracking. There's a little receipt, so you can take the receipt off, you can tear it off and, you know, track it. There's a barcode or a QR code. And, you know, once you drop your ballot in the mailbox, you can scan it to make sure that they have it. And I understand that there's lots of skepticism, right? But we're talking about choice, right? You know, you have the choice to vote by mail. And if you feel better about going into the place to drop your ballot, you know, that should be a choice that you have in most states. It isn't necessarily going to be only vote by mail.
That's right.
Yeah. And then also the third thing, you know, and we don't really know what this would look like nationally, but if your ballot is going to be thrown out because of the signature, that's going to happen anyway, whether you're there or you drop it in a mailbox.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the most important thing is to make sure we have a lot of different options that are available to everyone, so that people can feel comfortable that their vote was not disenfranchised in any way, shape, or form. And the truth of the matter is, we probably needed to have some of this in place anyway. We need a system that's resilient against pandemics, a system that's resilient against conflict and war, like a system that can survive no matter what emergencies we might have in our country. Democracy is at the bedrock of everything. So it all has to start out from there. So I'm hopeful that what we'll end up with is a system that is across the United States, or a series of systems across the United States, that are more resilient than ever before. Because I think that's the opportunity that's here right at our doorstep.
So just a question, and I don't know if you have an answer to this. How many states do you think right now are prepared to quickly shift in November to mail-in ballots? Do we have any numbers like that?
No, I think that's the magic question right now. I think people are starting to prepare. Officials are calling each other, calling other states. I think no local official wants to end up, you know, administering an election that puts them in the news or puts them in the spotlight. So I think that people are right now making these shifts and preparing and seeing how they can ramp up and scale up, especially in places where they're not used to having large numbers of people voting by mail. But I think that that's the question of the moment, what you just asked. It's a really great question. And I don't have a specific answer to it, because I think these plans are happening in real time.
So we already talked about what you think that listeners and constituents should be doing right now. They should be checking their voter registration. They should check it now. They should check it, you know, I mean, how often should they check it? Monthly? Like, how often should they be checking it just to make sure that they're registered?
Yes. I mean, I think check it. It takes 2 seconds. So check it as often as you know, every couple of weeks or so. That's what I do, just to make sure. I mean, it depends again on your state and how your state handles active and inactive voters, if you're in a state that has higher rates of suppression or not. But the best bet is just to keep double checking it and send your friends to check it as well, because it doesn't hurt anything. It's free. It takes 2 seconds. And so just go ahead and do those verifications leading into Election Day.
That's one thing that they can do. But what can they do because I like to inspire activists and people to get involved in the process. Like, what can people do to push their local governments to make sure that they are prepared in November? Should they be calling people? Should they be calling Congress? Who should they be calling?
I think a couple of things. Like, Congress needs to allocate resources to the states for them to be able to, you know, run the election the way we'd all like to see it to run. So even though some money has been allocated, I'm calling on Congress to allocate more to states, I think, is important. And then I think the second most important thing is just to go ahead and look at your state. You can go to vote.org to find state information and look at what the requirements are in your state. And start letting your friends and family know and think about who you could talk to in your state to try to make a difference, which is most likely, you know, your governor's office or your state legislator. For instance, there are places like in Indiana, your absentee ballot gets thrown out if it arrives after noon on election day. Like, what? I don't think most people know that. And so I think learning the, you know, what's happening in your state and being aware of whether you have laws that are conducive to voting in this time of COVID or not, super important. And it's going to be on all of us to figure this out and to work together to help build a more resilient system. Because truth of the matter is, you know, the people who work in this space do a lot of great work, and all the organizations that we partner with do a lot of great work. But American public is going to have to demand a system that is conducive to voting and makes it easier for people. And so we're all in this together.
No, you're right. They're going to have to demand it. But, you know, before I say goodbye, Andrea, I have to tell you that I just got an alert on my phone, breaking news, that Gavin Newsom just signed an executive order to send every Californian a mail-in ballot in November. This is in California, is the first state in the country to do this.
See, that's amazing. Good things are happening. This is such a live conversation. We should continue it because, you know, I think that leaders are making these decisions right now as we speak, and it's super exciting. It's really just makes me so happy to think that people are going to have their ballots mailed to their homes. And I know that recently there are some changes in Kentucky as well, and they're going to provide postage. So these changes are happening. It's really exciting, and we should all be championing the people who are on the right side of history here.
Exactly. Well, Andrea Haley, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for the amazing work that you're doing. I'm really happy that you're ahead of this. And everybody go to vote.org and check your registration status like as soon as this podcast ends.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you for listening. The Electorate is independently created and produced by me, Jen Taylor Skinner. And of course, I'm the host. But I also do all of the editing, the audio, and the graphics. You name it, it's on my plate. So if you enjoyed this episode of The Electorate, please help The Electorate grow by subscribing. Just hit the subscribe button on whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. Also, leave a review for The Electorate on iTunes. Lastly, one final way to help The Electorate is by following The Electorate on social media. That's at Electorate on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, keep up the good fight. Thank you.